Welcome to Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I have a returning guest this morning that I cannot wait to talk about, and I know you're going to love listening to her. Deborah Grassman is the CEO of a thing called Opus Peace, and we're going to talk about what Opus Peace is in a minute. Joining us also is Pat McGuire. She's the co-founder of Opus Peace and a family and trauma counselor. Good morning, and thanks for coming, you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
So tell us, let's start with the people who didn't hear the last interview, Deborah, that we did. What is Opus Peace? I know it's a nonprofit, but what is your mission?
Well, our mission is to respond to the soul injuries that people often sustain in lots of different ways, through abuse or negligence, or through war. And Pat and I both worked for 30 years doing hospice work with dying veterans.
That's a tough thing to do.
It is. And what we discovered was that dying veterans have a different experience sometimes than dying civilians, for example. They have some unique experiences, and also the trauma that they experience during combat sometimes surfaces unbidden at the very end of life.
Right.
And what we've also seen is that a lot of what we call warrior wisdom often emerges. And so, you know, there's really only a handful of people in this country who have seen, who have done trauma work with dying people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, dying people know things that the rest of us don't.
Right.
And people who've been traumatized know some things that the rest of us don't. And so, you know, there's lots and lots of people who are trauma counselors. There's lots and lots of people who deal with hospice and dying people. But there's just a handful of people that really have dealt with dying traumatized people. And that's almost a whole different arena and different population,
right,
with different wisdom to share. And what we really saw in dealing with, I personally took care of more than 10,000 dying veterans. And commonly we saw what we have come to term a soul injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that would emerge as they would talk about it.
Right.
And
is this different, Deborah, than PTSD?
It is different than PTSD. Soul injuries, you know, can range from you know, the aftermath of something traumatic,
mm-hmm,
to very almost insidious things. A soul injury is anything which causes us to separate from our own sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And cause us to turn away from that. Certainly you can appreciate that combat,
right,
often does that.
And we hear that with children who have been sexually abused.
Yes, children who've been sexually abused. I mean, it's really, you know, you even think of kids or anybody who's been bullied. You
right.
know, if
exactly.
If you think back when you were a child,
mm-hmm,
and someone called you a name,
right,
someone intimidated you or bullied you, and you believed it, and so it caused you to think there was something wrong with you.
Oh, boy.
Or that you know, whatever. I mean, that's a soul injury, too. I mean, it doesn't sound like a big thing compared to combat,
right,
and having to kill other people and those types of things. But on both ends of that spectrum is still that turning away from your own self, and it causes people to have their own inner sense of beauty kind of shrunk.
But you saying that about bullying, I have seen that in my own life and so many other people's lives and never thought of it this way. It's when you said that, I literally in my mind went, aha.
Yes, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people come away after experience, when they turn away from their own sense of self, they start thinking there's something wrong with them,
exactly,
there's something defective,
exactly,
and they start losing touch with their own inner sense of goodness and beauty. And we commonly saw that after combat with veterans, but, you know, we all, if we look at our own lives, we commonly see that. Or you think about, you know, for those of us who remember Women's Lib, and prior to women's liberation, you know, commonly, you know, if a woman wanted to work back then, a lot of times, you know, a husband might be saying, oh, you don't need to work. You know, why would you want to do that? You know, what's wrong with you that you can't be satisfied just staying
right
home? And women commonly back then thought there was something wrong with them, that they couldn't behave and feel satisfied the way other women did. And so, again, you kind of sometimes lose your inner sense of connection with your own self. And so that's what we have come to call a soul injury, whether it be insidious, mm-hmm, or whether it be traumatic.
Well, the first time that I ever heard that word used, soul injury, is when I met you. And I thought to myself, I mean, it immediately touched a chord with me because I knew that we were going to be talking, obviously, about things that happened during war. And you would think that, soul injury, that makes sense. But when you started talking, even the last time that we spoke, about other things, whether it be abuse or, in this case, bullying, really, I didn't think about it, as I just said before, there are a lot of things that many of us can go through. It can even be a really bad traffic accident.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's so many things that do injure our soul. And I loved the way that you put that.
Well, the other thing is the when you asked about PTSD and soul injury, the approaches are different.
I see.
Because with a soul injury, really what you're going to do is you have to help people disarm their heart. And in PTSD, oftentimes what they're doing is kind of trying to avoid triggers, and then fear sort of becomes what they trust. They trust their fear and trying to stay away from things and avoiding things.
Right.
Whereas with a soul injury, to recover yourself and you get back connected to yourself, you have to disarm your heart.
Huh.
And a lot of that comes through grieving, learning how to grieve and forgive, especially self-forgive. And so you're talking about self-compassion and how to develop that. That's a very different approach than the approach to PTSD, where with PTSD, a lot of it is just trying to keep that the amygdala part of the brain calm down so it's not firing off and sabotaging your life, you know, with every trigger that comes along. Those kinds of things, dealing with a lot of the symptoms. A soul injury is a very different approach, coming to the part that's generating symptoms.
I see.
Not just treating symptoms, what's the part of self that's generating the symptoms.
And actually, that was the next question I was going to ask you. Do you find that when you start working with people that it is very difficult for them to face what it is that's bothering them? That has got to, when you bring that stuff back up and remember those things, and like you say, heal that, has got to be a traumatic experience.
I would say yes and no. First of all, I would say it takes tremendous courage to remember what you don't want to remember.
Exactly.
So right off the bat, it takes tremendous courage.
And that's the hard part.
The second thing I will say is that for as much damage as denial does for all of us, it also plays a very important protective role.
Sure.
So what we have found with the 10,000 dying veterans that have informed us and developed, there is a way, and we've crafted a very safe way emotionally, where people can approach as much or as little as they are able and capable. And we show them a very simple, straightforward process that they can take forth so it can continue to unfold even after they leave, you know, the workshop that we do.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think that some people who are listening are like, oh, that's too scary for me. I don't want to be pushed into remembering these things. But it sounds to me that you are giving people the space to get there in their own time.
People should never be pushed into doing ever. And we're very careful not to do that. What our programs is, we open the door and they can go as far or as not far as they want. In fact, one of the things we always say is it's amazing how much healing can occur by simply witnessing one of the ceremonial workshops without truly participating in it in a deep way, but just simply being there and watching what happens in a whole room full of people, and there's no public disclosure at all. So nobody knows what anybody else is working on at all, but there's tremendous power in being in a room full of people who are all confronting their unmourned losses that they have and their unforgiven guilt that they have. There's something very powerful about doing that, and there is a way to do that, and that's what we've learned from dying combat veterans. They've taught us pretty much how to do that.
And I have so many questions about that. I mean, are there gems that you have taken out from dying veterans that come to the top of the pile every time that you can share with us?
Well, you know, the main thing in general that I would say is that, you know, as people come to the end of their lives, for everybody, veterans, non-veterans, traumatized, non-traumatized, it's very normal and natural to start reviewing your life.
Of course.
You kind of go back, and you've heard about it. So you do what we call life review and kind of try to make sense of it and what have you. And what we often saw with veterans was that they often had a lot of losses in their life, not just through combat, but relationships and sometimes alcohol usage, those types of things causes a lot of loss and change and what have you. And mm-hmm. so what we would do is help them grieve those losses, not just the loss they were currently having with their own current death that was occurring, but mm-hmm. to go back over their lifetime. And then certainly a lot of regrets and shame would surface. And so we would help them with forgiveness, forgiving others, and also forgiving themselves. And what would we frequently would see was you would see this shift. You would see this liberating shift occur. Mm-hmm. And then sadly, almost poignantly, I would say, a veteran would look at us and say, why did I have to be dying to learn this? Why did I have to wait to be on my deathbed
right.
to feel this and experience this liberation? And that really was the impetus for us starting Opus Peace.
Mm-hmm.
Is because, of course, the answer is you shouldn't have to be waiting to die. But our culture is very much an anti-grieving culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And particularly for men, I think.
Particularly for men, but even in our American culture in general, you know, it's pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Right.
You know, we have a heritage of rugged individualism.
Of course.
And then, of course, if someone goes into the military, then that's magnified
right.
100-fold.
Right.
So, at any rate, so there is no value placed on grieving, and grieving is the natural, normal emotion that accompanies letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you really want a prescription for heartache, you know, if I say, hey, do you really want to hold on to your heartache forever? And if someone says, no, I don't want to do that, then I'll say, well, your prescription then is grieve.
Yeah.
And that's the irony. That is the irony that for some reason a well-kept secret
right.
in American culture and in many cultures,
right.
especially American, certainly in American culture, especially American male culture, and certainly the American military culture.
Well, and I think one of the reasons, and please tell me if I'm wrong, is that because we have not really been very good. We've not been well educated. We haven't really figured out until someplace, an organization like Opus Peace comes along, there aren't a lot of places out there that teach those skills. I mean, where do you go? Until I talk to you, I would have never thought, I would have thought, yes, there's places for guys and women and men who come back that have PTSD. We're now training dogs to be, you know, companions for returning service people. And that's helping with some of those. But beyond that, something's happened to us as women, even especially. Things can happen, attacks, those kinds of things. Beyond just getting the couple of counseling sessions that you might get through your insurance, it didn't seem like there was a place like this for you to go through that whole process, because it's not going to be resolved in 4 or 5 counseling sessions in an hour with somebody who doesn't know anything about soul injury.
You're very right. We're not our this is a real gap in our educational system. Actually, it's kind of interesting to me. The American Psychological Association mm-hmm. has developed what they call a post-traumatic growth inventory, and they have this list of questions, I think about 21 questions. And I'm not kidding you, probably fully half of them relate somehow to the soul, like about
wow.
intimacy, about faith, about, you know, meaning in life and loss of purpose and this and that. Anyway, different questions like that that are clearly related to the soul. But when you look at the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Health, the DSM, that mm-hmm. has all the criteria in order to make a diagnosis of PTSD,
right?
Not one of those criteria that they're measuring
wow.
in the APA, the American Psychological Association's measurement of growth after post-traumatic stress, and yet the criteria aren't even listed. A lot of the criteria are not even listed in the DSM. And so, to me, just that fact alone,
mm-hmm.
that discrepancy
right.
alone, shows the elephant that's in the middle of the room. People know it, just like you said earlier, Mimi, where you said, you know, when you said the term, I recognized it immediately. So we all know it, and when we can get educated just a tiny bit about it.
Right.
When I say the word soul injury to a combat veteran, I don't have to define it.
No.
I don't have to say anything further. There is a shift in them, and they just look at me like, oh my gosh, this woman gets it.
Right, right.
Just the term.
Well, and I can imagine you saying that, like, say, to a rape victim. I would imagine that the very same, similar...
It is.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I've dealt with many rape victims. I've mm-hmm. dealt with many rape victims in the military. And they do. They immediately recognize. They will often say how they lost their soul.
Right.
That night or
right.
that day, whatever day. The next day, they woke up without a soul after they were raped.
I am just so interested and so on board with this because I've worked with a man who is helping a lot of returning Vietnam veterans. And of course, one of the problems that they deal with on a continuing basis is the lack of respect that they were given when they got home. I mean, it's bad enough that what happened to them in combat, then they come back and they are ostracized by the very people that they served. That in itself, there's a soul injury, come back and get another one.
Yeah, and sometimes they will even tell you, I mean, that's even the deeper one. I've had rape victims say the same thing, that as bad as the rape was,
right,
how they were handled and how they were managed after the rape was even more damaging for
right.
them.
Right, exactly.
One of the research has been really clear about, there's a lot of different risk factors that increase your risk for getting, for developing PTSD, but one of the major risk factors is whether or not you got support at the time of the original injury.
Wow.
So the best way to treat PTSD is actually to prevent it.
Right.
And the way you prevent it is when the original injury occurs, it's providing the support for it. And of course, that's almost unheard of. For example, children of who are being abused by their parents, for example, there's no reporting it.
Right.
Because they're the person
that would be reporting. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. On a if you're a combat soldier, you know, and you're on a mission, you got a battle today and tomorrow and the next day or the next week. I mean, you can't really stop and get the support that you need. If you're in the military and you've been raped and you report it and then that gets turned against you and,
right.
you know, and then you, you know, they use it against them sometimes. I mean, those are the kinds of things that actually, it's not just the original injury, it's how that original injury was handled.
Right.
That
makes a big
determines
difference.
Whether or not it goes deeper.
Right.
And if you're left alone and unsupported or ostracized or made fun of, and you create this web of shame around it,
right.
and or outrage around it, then that's what allows it to go even deeper, and then you're just kind of left alone with it, and it settles off into your soul. And as I said, my definition sort of soul injury is that you end up separating yourself, numbing out, disconnecting from the part of yourself that's carrying that pain.
And then we have alcohol and drug abuse and everything to self-medicate after that to
oh,
cause
yeah.
even
it's
more
a great
problems.
Way to try to numb out and avoid the pain.
I know that what I'm going to say, somebody's going to roll their eyes at, because this is in a perfect world. But it seems to me if we could really get Opus Peace and other, I don't care who else it is, I know you're going to agree with what I'm saying, if we could get these things taken care of and that we would become more confident, nicer people, we'd have a better society because we wouldn't be taking out these soul injuries on other people. And whether or not we really mean to do that, I think it happens a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we at Opus Peace have a very ambitious vision, and we absolutely, our intention is to start a movement. Actually, one of our goals for this year is actually we want 9/11 declared National Soul Injury Awareness Day.
Awesome. Awesome. That would be great. What a great way to really honor that day and to turn it into something besides the horrible tragedy that it was.
Exactly. It would be a way of redeeming that day and,
right.
and saying, hey, let this wake us up.
Right.
And part of what we say at Opus Peace, you know, that time old saying about peace begins with me.
Right.
It begins in me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to do, like you said, we have to restore our own souls to wholeness so that we can understand that we don't want to be running away from the very thing that can free us up, because this pain that we're running away from is the portal into our deeper self, into
right.
our soul self. And the soul is what's carrying this pain, because the soul is vast and strong and it's capable of carrying the pain. That's why it's the part of ourselves carrying it.
Right.
So when we disconnect from the pain, we're disconnecting from our own soul. And that's, of course, a huge loss of vitality and part of the, you know,
the experience of living.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have something coming up this Saturday that's free, which is awesome. And explain to me, it is not one of your symposiums, but it is a celebration. Would that be the best way to explain what's going on Saturday?
I hadn't thought about the word celebration, but you might be right. We actually call it a ceremony.
Okay.
So, at any rate, it's called a Fallen Comrades Ceremony. And basically, this is an opportunity for veterans and their families. Families are often unsung heroes.
Right.
They often are the ones surrounding that veteran that they, too, sustain a lot of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And also civilians to come together. And it's an opportunity for these veterans to and their family members to be able to lay down the burdens that they carry in the aftermath of dangerous duty assignment. It doesn't necessarily have to be war. There are lots and lots of non-combat, mm-hmm. dangerous military assignments where people suffer a lot of the PTSD-type things that commonly are talked about in wartime. But at any rate, so it's an opportunity for them to come forth. It's an hour and a half to two-hour ceremony. It's going to be held at Day Spring Retreat Center in Parrish, Florida. The address is 8411 25th Street East. And they can register. There is no charge. The event is free, sponsored by Opus Peace. And you can go to our website, the www.soulinjury.org.
You can also go on there and find the extended weekend retreats that you have to do this too as well. You can find all that information there.
Well, we are actually holding there that weekend. It's a leadership retreat basically to train other people in how to do these ceremonies.
So but I guess
I always say that, you know, we want to help heal our nation after war. We want to help heal. Mm-hmm. We also have programs for, you know, that are not military related at all, but,
right.
you know, for all of us.
Sure. You want to maybe go to one of those weekends, but this is a great way for you to see kind of what's going on. And like you say, you don't have to participate necessarily, but simply watch what's going on and kind of get an idea of the kind of work that you do.
Yes. Okay. I would certainly encourage you, whether you're a veteran, a family veteran, or a civilian, to come at, it's at 6:30 at the Episcopal Retreat Center, which is called Day Spring.
Pat, hi, how are you? Pat McGuire is the co-founder of Opus Peace, and you're a family and trauma counselor. How long have you been doing that?
Probably for about the last 20 years.
How long have you been involved with Opus Peace? When did it really come into fruition?
Opus Peace really was born about 3 years ago now, and our direction is getting clearer and clearer. The work that we did at the VA working with the dying veterans really was what led us to develop Opus Peace.
I see.
Because they were teaching us so much about the wisdom that they had gained from the suffering that they had had
right.
in their lives. And so when we retired from that, we developed Opus Peace because we wanted to be able to share what they had taught us mm-hmm. with the rest of the world, essentially.
Well, I think it's interesting. You've been a family and a trauma counselor for quite some time, probably your whole career. And then you get involved with these dying veterans, and you realize that there is this huge hole that needs to be filled.
Absolutely. And to be able to have the advantage of being with them and the honor
right.
of being able to walk through that with them and with their families. Because primarily I worked with their families. The trauma that the veterans had suffered has certainly impacted their families in many, many ways. And so much of the work that we were developing with the veterans could then be transposed onto the family members
mm-hmm.
so that they, too, could have the opportunities to mourn their unmourned grief. You know, when a veteran came home from war and was not the same person that they had sent off to war,
yeah.
that was an incredible loss for them.
Exactly.
And there was no opportunity given to acknowledge that. You know, everybody was supposed to go home and get right back into things the way they used to be. And the fact was that there was nothing the way that it used to be.
Everything was different.
Everything was different. And so that unmourned grief and the unforgiven guilt, you know, when you go off to war and you see what you see in order to take care of me and my country, and I'm home here complaining about the garbage didn't get picked up today.
Right.
You know, it puts everything into a much different perspective. So there's a great deal of work within the families as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the focus that I had.
So you've been doing this for quite some time, and you go into this and you are getting all of this wisdom from these men and women that are returning home. I think that everybody that's listening wants to know, are there gems that, was there a moment for you? Was there an aha moment when you realized this particular thing this person just told me, or this, you know, compilation of experiences needs to be told? I mean, what really said to you, I got to do something about this?
I think that the primary thing was when you would see the look on the face of a family member who had been estranged. Many, many of our returning veterans have had more than one family, because when they came home, they were different. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to fit back into the family, and there wasn't anyone there to help them to do that. So there would be a divorce.
Right.
Then there would be a second marriage, and maybe that wouldn't go so well either, because now you're integrating more than one family.
Well, not only that, but you still have the problems that you came home that ruined the first family over.
Right, but yes, that's true. And you're also trying to, the second family, you're now that person when you go into the marriage.
True.
So that's a little bit more understood. But very often that would also wind up in a divorce, and then there would be some recovery along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got into recovery, they might then marry for a third time. So at mm-hmm. the time of their death, there would be three families at the bedside.
Right.
There'd be the abandoned family. There'd be the family that possibly was abused or suffered abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be the family that thinks that this person is the greatest thing in the world.
Because they got the new
and
improved.
They got the recovery person.
Right.
And so for me, that was the greatest aha moment, was what information, you know, what treatment, what care does each one of these families need?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, some of those families I would watch just try to tear one another up. And there would be other families that, given the right care and information, could then make the transition to understanding soul injury and what each of them had paid for soul injury,
right,
for their patriotism, for their country.
And that's my next question, recovery. A lot of people, I think, they think that talk therapy or these kinds of things are hoo-ha and that they don't work. But I personally, and I'm not a mental health professional, when I have seen people really get touched by Opus Peace or organizations that do very similar work, there really is, you can literally see a veil lift off of these people. Their face shines. You can see this come off of them. You see this too, do you not? You see real recovery.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things, my son volunteered with the hospice when I was working there. And one of the things he would say at the end of the day, he was 13 years old. And after volunteering there, he would always ask me, "What miracles did you see today, Mom?"
Oh, wow.
And we did. We saw miracles on a very regular basis, because when people understand soul injury, when they understand that they too have paid the price of freedom, when they understand those things, it all shifts. You cannot change the past, but you can change your relationship to the past.
Right.
Which in turn changes your relationship to the future.
Beautiful. I mean, absolutely wonderful. And I'm so proud of you guys. And I'm so glad and so blessed that you would come on here this morning and share this with me. I want to make sure that everybody that's listening, whether or not they can make the celebration or ceremony that Deborah said this Saturday, that they can get all the information they need. So can you go through phone numbers and websites with us?
Yes. The website is www.opuspeace. PEACE.org, and they'll be able to find the information there.
Okay.
And they can also call 727-384-385-8471.
I, again, appreciate both of you being here. Pat McGuire, the co-founder of Opus Peace, and Deborah Grassman, the CEO of the organization. Ladies, you have done something for us. I think, you know, the beginning of the year, you know, everybody makes these resolutions, and it might be something silly like, I'm not going to eat chocolate. But really, to repair your soul or somebody else in your family and to start the new year with these kinds of tools, amazing. Absolutely amazing. So thank you for joining us this morning.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much.